Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Anxiety, we're talking about anxiety once again, and we know that it's not just an adult problem. Kids and teens experience it too, often in ways that go unnoticed. And kind of similar to when we spoke of depression, oftentimes it's kind of like anxious about what, honestly, right? So a child's constant stomach aches, sudden outbursts, or refusal to go to school may not be simple misbehavior, but signs of deep anxiety. Teenagers juggling academic pressure and social expectations, they might retreat into silence rather than express their struggles. But how can parents, teachers, and caregivers recognize anxiety in young people? And what can be done to help them to navigate these overwhelming emotions? This is the question that we're going to be delving into with Pearline Coughlin from the Vista Clinic joining us once again. Good morning, Pearline, and welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Bongi, and good morning to all our listeners. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Pearline, what are some of the common signs of anxiety in children and teenagers?
Thanks, Bongi, for your question. You know, anxiety in children and teens, it can show up in different ways. And when we look at anxiety in children and teens, it's very important to also consider the age as well as the personality.
Right.
Because this also plays a role in what we see or experience. So we may see physical symptoms, we may see emotional symptoms, behavior symptoms, as well as academic and social struggles. And I'll just mention a few examples quickly. When it comes to physical symptoms, for example, you may find that a child frequently complains of headaches or stomach aches, and there's no real medical cause therefore. And also restlessness or fidgeting. They may also experience some of the symptoms that we experience as adults, like increased heart rate and shortness of breath. On an emotional level, we find there's excessive worry or fear, and it's especially about everyday situations. So a child may show irritability or mood swings. Frequent crying is often one that is experienced, or sensitivity to criticism. And this usually goes hand in hand with a low self-esteem or self-doubt. Now, if you think about it, adolescence already, for many teenagers, and you know, children in transition into adolescence, is quite a daunting experience. So they can be worried about things like, what do I look like? How do I present?
Yeah.
And oftentimes this also causes severe feelings of feeling overwhelmed or even out of control.
Mm.
You know, that they're out of control of what is happening. And then when it comes to behavior, and this is usually one, you know, if parents know their children, this is usually a very good indicator where you see different behavior. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a child will suddenly avoid social situations or school or activities that they usually enjoy. They suddenly don't want to engage with that anymore.
Yeah.
They have trouble concentrating and become easily distracted. And a very important one is that they may see constant reassurance from parents or teachers, and it may be something really simple like, what do I look like? You know, their physical appearance becomes really important.
Yeah.
There's also perfectionism or extreme fear of making mistakes,
mm-hmm.
and sudden changes in eating habits. So, you know, some children or teenagers may suddenly eat more, or they may eat less, and this is often a good indicator to parents as well that, and teachers, that something is happening.
Yeah.
When it comes to academic and struggles,
mm-hmm.
a big one, where we suddenly see there's a decline in school performance, or they find it difficult focusing. Sometimes there's reluctance to go to school or complete refusal. And the child will just say, no, I'm not going to school today, but there's no apparent reason why.
Mm-hmm.
And they also find it really difficult to make and keep friends, Pongi, something that we may take for granted, just speaking to people in general and making friends. When it comes to anxiety,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and we often find ourselves from family and peers, and it happens more often, so it's very noticeable when it comes to this.
Mm. Oh man, when I think about children and teenagers going through anxiety and probably not even understanding what's going on, not knowing that, you know, this is a real thing, especially in situations where we now, as the parents, as the adults in the room, not really understanding it either, think that it's just a child acting up.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the key struggles for teenagers and children are always the fact that they don't have all the words to explain. You know, it's not similar to the adult experience where adults can express their fears and their worries and read in great detail. For children and teenagers, it can be a quite different experience, Bongi.
Sure. So how does childhood anxiety differ from, you know, how maybe an adult would experience it?
There's also quite a few ways where this happens. So Bongi, children experiencing anxiety through physical symptoms. So like I mentioned before, you hear quite a few complaints about stomach aches or headaches or avoidance or even tantrums, what we call tantrums. We see that, and they don't have the language to describe their frustration, as we've just said now.
Right.
The types of worry for children and adults are very different. Children may experience normal fear, you know, just around separating from their parents.
Right.
And we see this oftentimes, for example, when children have to go to school or to creche or other places where they show this intense fear. Sometimes normal, but for many of them who experience this anxiety, it can be very intense, the separation from their parents. And fear of the dark, fear of monsters or school-related worries, you know, while for adults, their fear is around life concerns like work and stress and finances, marriages and health. When dealing with anxiety, children totally rely on parents or teachers and even other caregivers for reassurance and support. So what happens is they may even avoid anxiety situations alter anxiety of inducing situations altogether. But for adults, it's a bit different. They learn how to cope with what is going on.
Right,
although they can still avoid certain situations, but over time, they learn how to deal with
it.
Yes, for children, it interferes with school, friendships, and family relationships as well. And you know, if long-term effects for children, if it's left unattended, it can spill over into adulthood as well, which then leads to more serious disorders in adulthood and maybe even makes it a bit more difficult to deal with.
Sure. And so what are some effective ways then for parents and teachers, caregivers to support anxious children?
So the one thing that is very important when it comes to supporting children, Bongi, and also teens is that support requires patience and understanding. And, you know, that goes hand in hand with things like validating their feelings, to acknowledge their worries, and instead of dismissing them, is to teach them coping skills, similar to what, you know, we shared earlier around techniques like deep breathing, mindfulness and relaxation, and also to encourage them problem-solving skills, to teach them to deal with problems in small bits, and not everything at once. And you know, when parents experience anxiety, it's good to show them how to deal with stress. So children learn what they love. So when they see a parent breathing deeply, it's something that they learn eventually. It's something that they know that when they find themselves in situations which is highly stressful, it's to take a moment and to just breathe.
Right.
Another very important thing, you know, when it comes to children and adolescents, is to set healthy routines in the family as well as at school. We know that predictability can ease anxiety, so consistent routines helps them. Like, you know, eating the same time, sleeping the same time, attending to normal tasks at the same time. So structure is very important when it comes to boundary setting. And then just to provide a safe space for them, there's no judgment. And also eventually, you know, we encourage people to seek professional help if the anxiety of a child and adolescent impacts their lives so significantly, then it's very important to seek help. In a classroom for teachers, it's important to create a calm classroom environment to minimize overstimulation and also just to provide a quiet space where they can self-regulate. Also, order and structure is important there, and to offer them choices. You know, for example, say, would you like to work alone or would you like to work with a partner? And then, you know, it's important also that teachers work with parents and counselors to support teenagers or children who may experience anxiety.
Right, right. Interesting. Now, this question I found very interesting, that, you know, can school pressure and social media contribute to anxiety in young people? And my immediate answer there would have been, well, I guess in a way, but at the same time, I wondered maybe for anxious children, it helps them to, you know, it helps them to relate to the world outside without actually having to go outside. So I don't know, does it still contribute to anxiety in young people? Social media, school pressure?
Yes, it does, Bongi. And I also feel like what a relevant question. I'm actually happy that you're asking that question, because oftentimes we think, you know, that sending a child to school or engaging with social media would actually calm them down. But there are a few things that comes into play. So with school pressure and anxiety, these academic expectations and usually high expectations from parents and teachers and even from children themselves, mm-hmm. it can create a lot of stress, especially if you think about heavy workloads, exams, and also school pressure. With that is the fear of failure. Right. So many students feel intense pressure to succeed, leading to perfectionism and then also fear of making mistakes. And these days, Bongi, sometimes when I look at the schedules of many children, we find there's an overload of school schedule, or not just a daily life schedule. Yeah. Yes, where they may find it very difficult to balance school, extracurricular activities, homework, and this social life. It can cause quite a bit of overwhelming sense of, you know, they're not busy coping. And in relation to that is also peer competition, where they compare their grades and achievements to other classmates and even siblings. I often find my parents need to do this, and teachers, because they know siblings from before, parents in one house. And then this also can create quite a sense of high anxiety in many young people. So social media and anxiety, Bongi, what a question. On social media, we find that there's a comparison culture where we see curated perfect lives.
Yeah.
And social media can make young people feel that they are inadequate or like they're falling behind. There's the fear of missing out, FOMO, we know, where there's constant exposure to others, socialize, and this can create pressure to always be involved, or the sense of I have to keep up.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm going to be out, or I'm outdated, you know.
Yeah.
And then cyberbullying is a very real and true experience for many young people and children. There's negative comments, there's online harassment or exclusion, and this impacts a child or a young person's self-esteem and also their mental health, because, you know, eventually they start seeking for, or there's a need for validation.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're on social media, they seek likes. The more likes you have, the more comments you receive.
Yeah.
This is important. And when it doesn't happen, when the engagement is low, then this impacts the sense of, you know, I'm not worthy. And then obviously also further, if you're someone that struggles with anxiety, it does make it higher. And then sleep disruption can also help because of social media. Sometimes I hear complaints from parents where children have excessive screen time, especially before bedtime.
Yeah.
And this can affect their sleep quality and also worsen anxiety.
Mm.
With that is also information overload. So there's exposure to negative news, unrealistic beauty standards, for example,
mm-hmm.
and often harmful content, which can also increase stress and self-doubt. And I thought about, I'll share with you, Bongi, and also just our listeners, you know, how to help young people manage the anxiety from school and social media.
Uh-huh.
Just a few pointers. It's firstly to encourage them to have a balance and also to promote realistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for parents to set healthy screen time limits.
Right.
So encourage digital, what we call digital detoxes, and also mindful social media. So watch what your child is exposed to. And then it's very important also to, from a young age, teach our children self-care strategies like mindfulness, exercise, good sleep, and so on. And also just to create a creative and a supportive environment for them. Make them feel that they are comfortable to speak to you, they can trust you as a parent, as an adult, whether it's at school or at home, but that they have that kind of support.
Mm, beautiful, beautiful. Now, when should professional intervention be considered for an anxious child?
So, Bongi, this is very important. When we notice that a child or a teenager, they have symptoms and the symptoms persist over time, it can also intensify. So sometimes we find that there's a week of exam, which is very normal, and we'll see that, you know, there's behavior which is stressful. But as soon as it becomes longer than that, then we should take note and see maybe that the child needs help.
Okay.
When they start avoiding you know, the daily social interactions, you know, things that they used to do that they enjoy, they avoid those. When there's physical symptoms, frequent stomach aches and headaches, fatigue, or other physical complaints, but there's no medical cause, then it's also time to seek help, maybe. Where there's emotional distress, which is very intense or excessive, and the word is excessive crying, irritability, meltdowns, or intense fear, and sometimes, you know, not even understanding what the fear is about. When you ask, you know, what are you so scared of, or what makes you so anxious, and the child cannot explain, that's also a good time to look for help. Sleep and appetite changes, if they have trouble sleeping, there's nightmares or significant changes in eating habits, they find it difficult to function at school, or when there's compulsive behaviors or rituals that they suddenly engage in. We call them repetitive behaviors like exercise, washing, or checking things, and it starts interfering with their daily lives, then we also know that we need to seek help. And the last one, which is very important, Bongi, and really calls for quite a bit of awareness from parents, from teachers and other caregivers, is when there's self-harm involved or when the child or adolescent shows, you know, has suicidal thoughts. So you'll hear them, they talk of self-harm or they engage in it. Mm-hmm. They want to disappear. They'll express the need to disappear or they feel hopeless. You'll know that these are really signs we need that, you know, that a child now needs help or a teenager needs assistance when it comes to anxiety.
Wow. Wow. Thank you so much, Perlene, for yet another illuminating, enlightening conversation. I think this is a very important one for us to have had. Why do you think it is that it's so difficult for us to accept or understand that children can actually go through anxiety? Like, you know, it's like we think that it can only be for grown-ups, or you have to have a reason to be anxious, like a proper reason, like your job is on the line, or, you know, those kinds of anxieties. And so I think there's this thing, like, why would a child be anxious about anything? Where does that come from?
For me, I think it's related to an old age idea of children are naughty. And you know what happens when children are naughty? It's easy to take out the rod and sort the child out, you know, with a spanking. But it's actually more it. And I think, you know, why this conversation is so relevant is that it creates so much awareness to parents and to children themselves and teenagers, and also to other caregivers like teachers and so on, where we realize that, you know, being naughty is not, it's almost like choosing the easy way out to describe or to say. I always have the expression of, I don't believe in naughty children, I only believe in lazy parents. Those are what we find. Yeah. So if a parent, you know, become aware, we know our children, we don't just give them something in their hand to correct their behavior, we explain and we discuss, then it becomes much easier. But I guess it comes, like I shared with you, from the old age idea that children are naughty.
Beautiful, beautiful. Perlene, thank you so much once again for another beautiful conversation. I look forward to chatting with you again on Wednesday.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Bongi, and thank you to our listeners.
Thank you.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.